Nothing in the world can take place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan "Press On" has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race. Calvin Coolidge. My next guest is Jennifer Tracy. When I think of perseverance and persistence, she comes to mind, and she's on a mission to save lives. With courage and grit, she continues to inspire high-functioning leaders to stop struggling silently and teaches the necessary steps it takes to find life on the other side of depression, anxiety, PTSD, perfectionism, and thoughts of suicide. This is a powerful episode you do not want to miss with Jennifer Tracy, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the CJ Evolution Podcast, a podcast for the criminal justice professional like you to not only make you a better professional, but a better person. Thank you for tuning in. That's why we continue to grow. Thank you for sharing it with your family and friends. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, especially now in these uncertain times. I know you think everybody's against you. That is far from the truth. You have millions and millions of supporters. Yes, I wish they were more vocal. But remember, you were honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Take care of each other, watch each other's backs, and come home safely. Folks, if you love coffee, you are going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. I've been a huge fan for several years now, and I am a big fan of the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. You will be too. Yes, I said mushrooms. It doesn't taste like mushrooms. It tastes better than regular coffee, and it's better for you. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. Folks, we are so honored here at the show to be partnered with a great company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of this company, you need to. This company is helping protect our brave men and women who protect us every day, military, first responders, by offering mobile threat detection available for the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs and explosives. This is must-have technology that you need for your organization. Now, if you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Detectachem. Trust me, you need this equipment. It's going to help keep your personnel safer. You know, folks, if there's one thing you should be looking out for every day, it's your health. I want to tell you about my good friends at Bioptimizers. If there's one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough, it's magnesium. Magnesium is the body's master mineral, powerful over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, even digestion is influenced by the presence of magnesium. But there are two big problems here. Magnesium has largely been missing from U.S. soil since the 1950s, which explains why it's estimated that up to 80% of the population may be deficient. And most supplements contain only one or two forms of magnesium, when in reality, you need at least seven that your body needs. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about a new magnesium product I've been talking about called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever experienced, with all seven forms of this mineral. I'm even more excited because it's finally back in stock. Magnesium Breakthrough has been selling faster than the company who makes it, Bioptimizers, has been able to keep up with. It's already sold out a few times, and due to supply shortages with everything going on in the world, it could very well be sold out again shortly. Now, the CJ Evolution team was able to arrange for some stock to be set aside just for our audience, and I guarantee it's the best deal available on this product. Seriously. With volume discounts combined with our 10% coupon code CJE10, you can save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. Now, that's an amazing value. And I promise that deal is only available on this specific website, www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution. Now, you're not going to find this deal on Amazon or even the company's own website. This deal is exclusively for podcast listeners, and it's legitimately for a limited time while supplies last. They've also completely revamped their checkout process, and it's much friendlier and easy. Magnesium Breakthrough is the most effective magnesium supplement I've ever tried. Say goodbye to having to buy 7 different bottles of magnesiums to get the complete dose. Again, go to www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution and use coupon code CJE10 to save up to 40% off select packages to get the most full spectrum and effective magnesium product ever. You will not be disappointed. On to this powerful episode with Jennifer Tracy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited and humbled to have my next guest on the show. Jennifer Tracy is here. Jennifer, are you there?
I am. How are you?
I am doing very good. I appreciate you being here. I know you're probably very busy and we're going to get into it, but you're doing so much great work for so many people out there. You've been through so much. That's an understatement in your personal life. Can you talk about how you got started on your path?
Yeah, you know, it's actually funny because it really ages me.
Well, you look great, by the way.
Thank you. When I say things like, you know, 16 years ago, 20 years ago, it's like, oh my gosh, wow. How can I have a 26-year-old? That can't be possible. Wow, the story of how I got here. So, young mom, had 3 beautiful little girls, and ended up, I was 24 years old and had to have an emergency surgery. And I was just really a go-getter, graduated a year early from high school, yeah. Top of my class, had my own hair salon, was, you know, really doing well in life and had never experienced depression, anything like that. But after this surgery, I really started to struggle with depression. And what that kind of felt like to me was just not wanting to leave my house, not wanting to do my regular activities, turned into not sleeping well, lots of irritability. And at the time, you know, I was a big churchgoer and I just felt like going to church, I just felt like this darkness over me. Mm-hmm. So I kind of did all of the things that I knew to do at that point. I went and talked to my primary care physician. They wanted to initially start me on some medication. I just was so opposed to that at the time. Mm-hmm. Went to my church and asked them to pray for me, pray over me. I tried doing like homeopathic type stuff. Yeah. That didn't work. I eventually started seeing a counselor and eventually did start taking, I think it was Prozac.
Yeah.
But a year into that battle, I started having thoughts of suicide and kept it quiet for a little bit and then confided in just a few people, my husband and someone at church. And then I started kind of talking to my counselor about it, just letting them know that I was having those thoughts. And really for an entire year, I battled suicidal ideation. Like by the time that end of that year, came up, you know, was there, like it was all day, every day. It was bad. Mm-hmm. And I know in my heart that I didn't want to die, but I couldn't figure out how to get the thoughts to stop inside of my head despite every effort that I tried. Mm-hmm. And so sadly, one day I was picking up my girls from school, and if anyone knows me at all, like in the core of who I am, all I ever really wanted to be was a good mom. And so anything that would have ever hurt my children was just so contrary to me. But one day I was in my car and had picked the girls up from school, and I had the thought to kill myself, to just drive really, really fast. Wow. With my girls in the car and to end my life. And that thought just about made me puke. Yeah. And so,
because your girls were probably young at the time, right?
They were, yeah. Yep, I had twins, and Amber was the little one. And anyway, so I drove home and told them to play in their room and to just, I asked them to promise me that they would just stay in there and wait till Daddy got home. And I called him and asked him to come home right away. And we found someone to come over and take care of the kids. And then I ended up walking myself into the ER, and I didn't really know what else to do. But I remember that moment where the person checking me in was like, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah.
And I just kind of stood there and I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but you know, I want to kill myself and I just don't know what else to do. And so, you know, that kind of was a very pivotal moment in my life. I ended up being in the psychiatric unit for weeks. And what they discovered while I was in the psychiatric unit was that I had thyroid disease.
Okay.
And that I didn't have any estrogen in my body at all. And because of those two things, I really hadn't slept well in almost 2 years. So they started me on some really high doses of Effexor, which was an antidepressant and something to sleep at night. And by the time I got home, I definitely felt better and was really starting to turn the corner of just new coping mechanisms. I was sleeping better. That depression, like the heaviness of it had lifted, and was really starting to feel like myself. And just shortly after that, my husband and daughter were killed by a drunk driver.
Jeez.
And so one of the things that I learned when I was in the psychiatric unit was the importance of red flags and having a safety plan and just really putting that oxygen mask on yourself, like the importance of taking care of myself. I had learned what the stages of grief were. So for myself personally, I really feel like that battle with depression and suicide actually prepared me to know how to fight for myself and my daughters who survived the crash that day. So, yeah, that's kind of the gory of, like, you know, the fact that that was 20 something years ago, and this year it'll be 16 years that my husband and daughter have been gone.
So sorry for your loss, Jennifer. And but I think it's, I love what you said about your oxygen masks. And I talk about this on my show all the time is, you know, and I think you're referring to what I'm thinking about, even though I hate to assume, but you know, you're on a plane, the oxygen masks fall. Who do you put on the mask first? You got to put it on yourself before you can, help anybody else.
Yep.
And so that's why I'm so happy that you came on, because you've taken all the tragedy in your life, and and we talked about there's still days that you suffer and you're angry, and but you're doing so much. You're teaching people how to take care of themselves better, which is so important. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, so I was just going to tell you, like, for me, I really did do that for 5 years or so. Man, I kept life super simple after they passed away. It was, you know, I volunteered at the girls' school. We cooked dinner every night. I got myself into therapy. I did EMDR because PTSD for me was nightmares, flashbacks, sitting up in my bed, screaming in the middle of the night, throwing up in public. Not wanting to leave my house for weeks. You know, being diagnosed with PTSD was very, very complex. And it was like this strange thing, because on one hand, it was like, okay, this is what I have. It has a name and I can research it and I can find ways to help myself. But at the same time, if any of the listeners take a look at me, they'll see, like, you would have no idea just by looking at me, you know, the things that I've been through. Oh, yeah. And so I struggled with, like, I remember this aha moment of like, okay, you know, I'm disabled. I have PTSD. I don't work. How do I make the inside match the outside? Because I felt so messed up on the inside. Mm-hmm. And it seemed so, like, wrong to walk around looking so normal. Yeah. And so for like a time, it was like, I kind of let myself go. I gained like 50, 60 pounds after my husband and daughter died. And, you know, there's just this conflicting part of like, who am I? Am I disabled? Am I not? But yeah, for 5 years, I really did put that oxygen mask on and worked really hard to go through my own transformational journey of healing and to help my girls do that as well.
Yeah. How, might be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So, I mean, did you, a lot of people, Jennifer, you talk to tons of people. You've heard of just so many stories. I mean, a lot of people would have given up, I'm assuming. How did, I know you had kids, but that doesn't stop people sometimes from taking their lives and hurting themselves. How did you keep going? I know it's a maybe it's a dumb question, but I mean, you had every reason to say, you know what, screw it, I'm going to give up. And so for the people out there suffering, did you surround yourself with people that were pumping you up? Were you consuming, things, not food-wise, but I mean, as far as like things that were pumping you up? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it really has like thwarted me into this line of work that I do. And I really love working with high functioning, driven, just leaders, you know, first responders, people of that nature, because when you're resilient, there's something about yourself that you learn early on. And like, I don't like being a victim. Mm-hmm. Even though I have been the victim of so many things, I just can't stand playing the victim card.
Yeah.
And so I guess one of the things for myself that helped me go on was I looked at the corner where my husband and daughter were killed. And I looked at that corner and I would have like a stare down with it. And I was like, you know, this corner could be the death of me. I made a promise to myself that when my other two daughters grew up and they looked back, that they would be able to say, my mom didn't die that day too. Yeah. My mom didn't die emotionally. She didn't die physically. You know, she didn't choose to kill herself. She didn't get numb on drugs to not deal with the pain. And making that choice to look at that field in a new way. And this is one of my favorite things. It's in my book that I wrote. So my book's called Inside the Mind of Suicide, From Deepest Darkness to the Light of Hope. In my book, what I basically say is, on that day, I was handed a pile of shit. Mm-hmm. But what I've discovered is that shit can grow some really amazing flowers.
I love that. Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things to do, is to help people really pinpoint for themselves, like, what is your pile of shit?
Because we all have them.
We all do, right? And when you can start identifying like what that shit pile is, and that you can either let it destroy you, or you can, like myself, like I will really go out to that corner and I will stand there and I will look at it and I'll be like, how can I keep growing more flowers in this field? Mm-hmm. Because I just can't stand to let any of it go to waste. And now that, you know, I've been speaking now almost 12 years, and now that I've spoken and I see the power in it, and the power of hope and the power of forgiveness, and even learning to forgive myself because of my own imperfections, like with PTSD, that's one of the hardest things to do, is to learn to love yourself in a new way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you're driven and you're successful and you're a perfectionist, it sucks. Like, all of a sudden, when you can't function at that high level, and, you know, people respect you for a certain level of accolade or what you've done, and then all of a sudden it's like you can't perform at that level, what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about when you talk about perfectionism, because we're all, I think, at least I was, you know, I was raised that you got to be perfect. You know, you can't make mistakes. But it's almost like you're setting yourself up for failure. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. we are going to fail. We are going to have times in our life where we fall. You know, it's human. You know, it's human nature. So I think perfectionism is a misnomer. There's no such thing as perfection.
Yeah, I really, working with my clients, what I do is I help them kind of establish their own baseline, and I teach them this concept of becoming a great marksman. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if every morning when you get up, your goal is to hit that center. And I say in the center of that is love. And you set your intention every day when you wake up, you know, to do your best, to be the best that you can be, but you're gonna miss. Like, it's inevitable to not miss, right? But what you do is you strive for excellence, not perfection. And you commit to the process of learning to become a great marksman. And in the process of that, you don't beat yourself up over the times that you miss. Instead, you focus on who you're becoming. And I will honestly say that that is probably core to why I'm still here, because I was willing to look at the areas that I was struggling and failing in, and I would work on them daily and master them little by little. And so where I used to look out at things and say, wow, I had 10 to 12 things that I didn't like about myself, or I maybe was doing differently than I had before PTSD. I learned how to remaster them in a new way. And so, you know, instead of having 12 or 7 or 8, I'm down to 2 or 3 things that I feel like in my life I'm still working on personally. And I'm okay with that, because I get up every day and I put my feet to the ground and I'm working to master those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's just amazing.
And so
amazing strength.
It's just about, you know, striving for excellence and like loving myself and saying, I'm proud of you, Jennifer, for even putting your feet to the ground and picking up those arrows and trying again, instead of like, oh my gosh, look at all the ways you failed, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm a firm believer too, Jennifer. And that's why I asked you, you know, when you were going through these horrific times in your life, did you have people around you? Because strong people that would encourage you, because I've been through some, nothing compared to what you've been through. But, you know, low times in life, and the people that were, you know, that are still part of my inner circle are the ones that were lifting me up, providing me strength and guidance and counsel, not the people that somehow disappear that I thought were friends. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's a saying, you're the average of the 5 you surround yourself with. And so I really do believe that, you know, the people that you surround yourself with are so instrumental in your life.
Absolutely. And that's that same principle. It's like when you think about, you know, the line of work that you come from, right? I mean, anytime that you would go out, you had each other and the power of teamwork and strategy and all those things, right? Mm-hmm. It's that same stuff that you have to learn how to apply when you're trying to learn how to master PTSD or depression or anxiety. And I know you and I talked just a smidge about, you know, like how does one really do that? And, you know, we talked a little bit about like, well, how do you even know if you have it or not?
Yeah, exactly. And I was there. I mean, I was there and I had a lot of friends that were there. Yeah. So how do you know? I mean, what are some of the signs?
And so again, it's like some of those really big ones are, you know, nightmares,
lack of sleep,
you know, just constant irritability. But what I like to teach people is what I call point of reference. And so you're able to look at yourself and say, you know, before X, Y, and Z happened, I used to respond this way, and now I'm responding this way. And how long have you been doing that? And that way everyone kind of has their own evaluation of themselves. So if you can pinpoint and say, wow, you know, you're right, before that happened, and then little by little, now I found myself here, because everyone does respond so differently to it. But I think probably one of the toughest topics to talk about is the whole self-medicating, like with addiction. And there's just so much shame around that. And again, it's just something I love to talk about with my clients, because it just, there shouldn't be any shame around the issue itself. And even like I was sharing with you, it's like, okay, you know, I put myself in the shoes of a commander, and his team is looking up to him and he's having thoughts of suicide. Well, who's going to respect him or trust his judgment or want to work right alongside him if he tells anybody that he's having thoughts of suicide? And yet what I ask people is like, are you in charge of those thoughts? Like, do you wake up in the morning and say, I want to have these thoughts? No, you don't. And that's really what has brought me here to this day. And like even getting to talk to you, which is wonderful, is I would say 3 or 4 years into speaking, what I realized was that when I would share with people that I had battled through PTSD and suicide and depression, anxiety, to be this woman in front of them, most people assumed that my battle with suicide came after my husband and daughter were killed.
Yeah.
And the thing that angered me so much was that, like, they pitied me. And it was almost if they were like, oh, well, rightly so. I mean, you know, her husband and daughter were killed. I could see why she, you know, like, who would want to live after that, right? It was like it was acceptable.
Yeah.
And like I said, it just brought out this wrong, like, pity from them. And inside, like I shared with you, no, my battle with suicide came before they passed away, out of nowhere. Almost cost me my life, almost took the lives of my children. And when I went through that, it was shameful. I lost friends. I lost people at church. Like, I didn't have people rally around me. So I absolutely know how painful it can be to make that step to go in and to call for backup, to get the help that you need. And because there's so much that can be lost if you admit that to anyone. And so what I would say today for anyone who's listening is, like, you need to make that first step and admit that you're having the thoughts. And you cannot be defined by the thoughts themselves. You can only allow yourself to be defined by what you do with those thoughts.
Absolutely.
So if you're having them, if you're struggling with depression and life feels different than it did a year ago or 2 years ago, you are not defined by those things. You're defined by what you do with that. And if you work in a department where it's not safe, maybe you've seen somebody who went and got help and now all of a sudden they lost their job, or people laugh at them, or, you know, then that's where it's up to you to start looking for resources on the outside of where you work, where you feel like it is safe, and then make that call.
And call Jennifer. Call you.
You know? And I am definitely one of those people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I am your call for backup. And I know when it's time to call in extra help, but I'm there to walk you through that. So, you know, if someone is sitting up in their bed with nightmares and flashbacks, yeah, we're going to have a discussion about what is EMDR? What have you tried, right? But because I've walked it all, you're not walking it alone. And so even how to have the conversation with your doctor so that you don't lose your job. I mean, these are all of the resources that I bring to the tables in this particular niche, you know, for our veterans and our first responders, all of them.
Yeah.
Because my goal is, I want to really help you keep what's important to you and get you back on track, right? And the sooner that check engine light has come on that you call me, the sooner that we can fix that and get you back out there.
Yeah. And I told you, Jennifer, I mean, you know, conversation before we started is, you know, I've been in law enforcement, you know, for a long time, over 2 decades. And I remember years ago where you just absolutely didn't talk about anything. You know, you get into a critical incident, see some bad stuff, see dead people, you just didn't say anything. It has changed for the better, you know, before I retired. But like I told you before we started, I think there's just so much more work. I mean, it's never ending. It's so, you know, there's so much more work that needs to be done. And that's not a dig on law enforcement. It's just the culture of law enforcement. It's the culture of criminal justice. Like we talked about, you said it perfectly. If I'm a senior officer or whatever, regular patrol officer, and if I go to somebody, if I go to my chain of command, not everybody, but I can speak from experience, they're going to be like, weakness.
Yeah.
You know, and we can't have you out there, but you need to, like you said, you need to take that first step you know, as soon as you see, I love what you said about the check engine light come on. You just, if you're driving in your car and your check engine light comes, what are people going to do? Oh, they'll be like, oh crap, I need to go get my engine checked. It's the same. It's the same with your mental health, you know? So you need to take, you need to go get fixed, for lack of a better
word. That's the part. So, you know, I wrote about that in my book. There's a whole chapter on check engine lights. And the whole concept of that is like, if you and I were driving in your car today and the light came on, would you feel fear or shame or any stigma to take the car in? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't.
Nope.
And sadly, when it comes to those lights that are firing off right inside of our mind, we do feel the fear, the shame, and the stigma, and therefore we don't take the car in to get it checked out. And that's what I'm really working hard out in our society of trying to be the face of. If you take your car in, if you get in there and you do the work and you do the things that do work, you can find life on the other side. Like it makes me so happy to tell you that I used to have 80% of those symptoms of PTSD. Mm-hmm. And today, like, I manage 20%. And so it's like insane crazy, because I tried to get off disability. And I know I told you this, but in the process of trying to get off disability, I ended up having to have brain surgery.
Yeah.
No joke. Like, lost the use of my hands, my feet. I had slurred speech. Like, I was put out again for 2 years. My daughter had to bathe me. Like, it was horrific.
Yeah.
And, but I just was determined. I was like, I will not let, I just hate losing. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, you're strong, you know, you're a fighter, which is admirable. Because, you know, like I said before, Jennifer, I think a lot of people, a lot of people would have said, you know what, screw this. This is too hard. You know, I'm just assuming, and I hate to assume, but I think there's a majority of people out there that would have said, screw it. I saw it all the time in my career is, you know, people taking their lives.
Yeah.
For various reasons. And I think a lot of it was just giving up. You know, I mean, you have so much to live for. I tell law enforcement this all the time. I mean, I remember one of the most powerful things I ever heard, Jennifer, was 1 in 400 billion. That is the chances. I didn't make that up. That's the chances of you being born.
Mm.
Statistically, I didn't make up this. And I'm pretty sure that that's the right numbers. Right. So we take a lot for granted.
Right.
The reality is we're not here that long, right?
Yep.
So you just have to be grateful for what you have. And like you said, everybody, I love what you said about everybody has their shit. Now, what are you going to do with it?
Exactly. And that's, I think, you know, when people hear me speak and they hear just some of these analogies, you know, that I love it. I weave them all into my speeches. They're in my courses, they're in my books. And that's, I love it. You know, when people send me emails and say, oh man, you know, I'm on chapter this, or I'm reading this, or when I'm working one-to-one with clients, it is the best feeling for them to come back to me and say, you know, I applied that technique that you said, and I used it 3 times this week. And so I try to bring, I would say, high level teachings down to an everyday level way of thinking about it. Like, I have a mantra that's called lose the battle, win the war. And you have to be willing when you're struggling with PTSD and depression, anxiety, like I was saying, you have to be willing to shoot out and miss those arrows and not beat yourself up over it, because you're staying focused on the war. And that war for myself was that I didn't die that day too. And so even when I had my brain surgery, right? It's like, I had to look at that and say, man, you're like, this is trying to take me out.
Mm-hmm.
And how can I fight it? How can I beat this? And so, yeah, for me to have come off disability, re-enter the workforce, start speaking. I have a 3-day program that I run for first responders. It's called Call for Backup.
Love it.
Love it. I love it, because not only do I get to just like share the portion of my story, but for some people, those lights go off and they're like, wow, she's talking about me right now. But for some people, they've already known the lights are on. They just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm that, you know, I get to stare at you into your eyes and be like, what are you going to do about it? You know?
Yeah.
And it does, it motivates them. It moves them into action and, you know, delivers that hope that it's possible. And that's, so yeah, so by all accounts, like they deemed me not worthy of disability anymore.
That's,
like technically, I don't have PTSD. What I have is, you know, anxiety. Like that, that is really what I manage. And, you know, there are days where I still will. And until you've buried a child, like, you know, you just don't even know the meaning of wail unless you know what wailing is. And so.
The one thing I was going to, I know you talked about this before we started, Jennifer. I mean, for the people listening, that horrific car crash that claimed your loved ones, did they find the person? Was he arrested? Or he, she?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you talk about, because what you said before we started was very powerful about forgiveness.
Yeah. And you know, it's a tough subject because the man who killed my husband and daughter, you know, was driving drunk. It was his third DUI. And I think one of the most interesting things for me is that when we went through the hearing, he was given 24 years. He was sentenced 24 years in prison. Mm-hmm. But he accepted it. He pled guilty. He was very, very remorseful. And so even then, I asked the judge that he be given every chance at rehabilitation. And I know that a lot of people, they can't understand my train of thinking, but when it comes to forgiveness, what I've discovered is that people don't have an accurate working definition of forgiveness. And you and I were kind of talking about this. It's like, it doesn't mean that I don't still feel anger.
Sure.
So to forgive someone means that I stop holding them accountable for it. So for me to say, you know what, Mr. Goonan, you killed my family. You can't ever make it right. Like, even if you serve a life sentence, it's never going to give me back what I want. Even if my best friends bring you in here and beat you to a pulp and kill you, it's not going to give me back what I want. I can't have it back. And so I have to release him from the pain and the anger and let him go on his way, right? Mm-hmm. And then it allows me to focus on myself, which is like, what am I going to do with the pain and the anger? And that's where so many people don't understand that depression is pain and anger turned inward. So if you can start to really analyze what are your top emotions and learn that it's your job to do something with them. And then you start honoring those emotions in a healthy, positive way. It gets it out of you. And so that's where I was saying to you, like one of my top emotions that I still struggle with is anger, but sure. I use it to convert it into something. Like, I'm not angry every day anymore, but like when I wrote my book, it was tough. It was tough to relive all of that. Coming off disability and having friends like judge me, like people who I thought cared about me. And then they were like, oh my gosh, you've been on disability, blah, blah, blah. Like to have judgmental people judge you. Yeah. You know, it hurts.
Not your friends.
Yeah, it hurts. And so, you know, but it just makes you dig in deeper and it makes you realize who you are. But yeah, to forgive him has been pivotal, but it comes back to, at the end of the day for me, I need forgiveness just as much as he does.
Sure.
And that's the bottom line for me. However, I will say to you, and I've had a lot of people bring this up because I always do a Q&A at the end of my speaking. People say, Jennifer, do you think it would have been different for you if the man didn't show any remorse? And I'm like, absolutely. Absolutely. If that man looked at me and didn't care about what he did, you know, tried to get his way out of it or wasn't sentenced or anything like that, would it have been as easy for me to forgive him? Absolutely not, right? However, what I talk about is like still forgiving someone and still going through the judicial process. Everything that our law enforcement does is so needed. Mm-hmm. Like every time I am around someone who is out there on that front line, I thank them for the work that they do. And it's hard because when I talk about forgiveness, I think that they think that I'm trying to like dismiss the behavior of that person, or that I like take for granted the work that you do for a living. And so it took a long time, but I was on a task force for 10 years in Denver. Mm-hmm. And I said, can I ask you guys something? Because I would get silenced a lot. I was commissioned to be there by the governor to remind everyone that behind every number and every statistic is a life. Mm-hmm. And they always wanted me to do it when it was a victim. But when I would remind them about the life on the other side, the one who was offending, I would be silenced. Nobody wanted to hear that until I said, yeah, until it's one of our own.
Yeah.
Until it's one of our police officers, until it's one of our judges, until it's one of our firefighters who have seen an 8-year-old hanging from a ceiling fan. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know what to do with those thoughts. And so he's numbing his pain. And while I'm not excusing that behavior at all, right?
Yeah.
We all want the forgiveness. We all want the, all that stuff until, right? Until it's someone we know or love that's on that other side of that line. And so I fought for both sides equally, that we should be working. And so I would ask our law enforcement, I said, look, if I can reduce recidivism by teaching these offenders how to forgive themselves and actually go out and change their lives, does that not make a difference in your life, in your work?
Absolutely does.
It does, right?
It absolutely does.
It does, right? If I can empower them to look at themselves in the mirror and make a change in their lives, it makes their, you know, it makes everyone's life better, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where victimology really comes in. Like when I took that course, I was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I am such a victimologist. It's not even funny. Victimologist has the ability to walk into a scene and unbiasedly look at all of the details and then come back out and make a decision on what happened. And so, like I said, you know, I'm not excusing the behavior of the man who killed my loved ones, but he did not get in the car that day and say, you know, I want to do this to Jennifer.
Well, it's needed for your going forward. I mean, you needed to forgive because you could have, that would have consumed you, Jennifer. You know that. You've seen people like that, that the anger, the rage, the substance abuse, it just takes over people. You chose to forgive. That doesn't dismiss the fact that you're still angry, but you're living your life. You're healing. And that's what it's about.
Well, yeah, in that corner, you know,
it's small,
that pile of shit, like it's a valley of flowers now. Like think of the power of that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, that's just the way that I see it. And so, and even for people listening today, it's like they have just now added, we've just, you know, added more flowers. Like it just, it's such a beautiful visual for me that like, there's no going back now. And that's why, like, you see me, you know, I am at a place of peace and I do experience absolute joy, and it's been 3 years. So like I said, they've been gone 16, but the last three, I've really felt the overwhelming presence of like mom, like my daughter, Brittany, just her just saying, mom, laugh, love, mom, like go live, like live till the very last breath that you have. Like, I'm good, mom, can't wait to see you, but like, please do not waste a moment of your life, you know? And that is a trick, man. You have to talk your mind into like,
Well, you have so much to live for. You got two other beautiful daughters, and I love the mission you're on, Jennifer. I mean, you're on a mission to save lives. So how can people find you, find your book if they want to reach out to you?
Yeah. So book is, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Inside the Mind of Suicide. Right now I am super, super excited. I've partnered with Shauna Springer. She is a leading expert across the nation, just an incredible woman on PTSD and trauma. The NFL just put a series out that she is in. Anyway, her and I have partnered, and we've created a course. It's called Redefine Your Mission. And I have bundled all of the contents from my book inside of this. So you get the book plus, I think it's like 22 videos from me, very short in nature. And then you get her book and 12 videos from her. Her book is called Warrior.
Wow, I like it.
I am super excited. We have that course. But for people who need a little bit more, they can reach out to me for coaching. And I would say one of the things that really sets me apart from other people is that victimologist mindset. It's really being able to analyze their entire situation for them and help them look at where there might be areas of gap, and then pinpointing and really putting like an action plan together for them and help them find success through that.
Amazing. Website, Jennifer?
Yeah. So it's jennifertracy-inspire.com.
Love it. Jennifer Tracy, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're a very strong woman.
Thank you for all of your years of service, and you know that you still teach, and you know, we were chatting, you know, my daughter's got a criminal justice degree.
Yeah.
She's still trying to figure out what she wants to do with it, but
nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
She'll figure it out. Well, we're going to have everything linked up in the show notes. Again, Jennifer, please, anything we can do for you, please reach out to me. I hope you have a fantastic day. Thanks again.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me on.
No, anytime, Jennifer. So take care.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.